The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Womanity Project live. I'm Aurélie Harp, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. In our last episode, we started our interview with Angela Ellsworth, a multidisciplinary artist traversing disciplines of drawing, sculpture, installation, video, and performance. Angela explained to us what was the Museum of Walking that she co-founded. She also talked about her Mormon family and how some of her work related to that upbringing, including the Pro-Life Project. And today, we continue our conversation with Angela. Let's hear what she has to say about the influence of her upbringing on her art and how it shaped the person she is today.
So I was raised in Salt Lake City, Utah, in a very strict Mormon household. The Plural Wife Project comes out of the fact that I have polygamist ancestors on both sides of my family. And so growing up, knowing that there were many wives married to one particular man was something that wasn't talked about too much. Although we knew that that existed, I grew up with just a one father, one mother. But knowing that there were these histories where there were many women, but all the women outside the first wife were deemed illegal or somewhat invisible. So later on, I got interested in the number of wives married to one woman and how that is essentially a community of women raising each other's children. And it is a sort of support system in a sense. Now, when I started making work about sister wives, I was thinking about this group of women with a lot of power and mystical qualities outside of a patriarchal construct. So I reimagined them outside of a compound led by a man and his rules, and what would happen, you know, what's the possibility of a group of women together creating home and family and creative energy on their own. And so that's the project. And, you know, it actually relates to who I am in the world. I'm a queer woman. I'm married to a woman. And so that sort of non-heteronormative history of my ancestors also runs parallel to my queerness now. So it was a way for me to sort of join hands with a history that I ran far away from, and to kind of look back again and see how it in some ways was a little bit similar to my non-heteronormative relationship.
Were you surrounded by a community of women yourself?
Yes, I guess I was. Not so much, not polygamous mothers, but definitely within that faith, they keep the boys and the girls separate. So you're always kind of, I mean, not all the time, but a lot of your youth is spent with a group of girls, like learning things that are deemed, that they would deem for, like, the girls would be doing particular activities like sewing and cooking and all that, which I hated. And then the boys would be, I don't know, learning to be scouts or, you know, learning to tie knots or something. To me, seemed more interesting. So, and my mom was, you know, she was a strict mother in terms of the faith, but she was also a little bit subversive. She was always sticking up for young girls being acknowledged publicly for certain feats that they had completed. And she also fought for, in our school, in my elementary school, I had to walk to school. She fought because the girls had to wear dresses, and she thought it was ridiculous because I had to walk in the snow. And so she got the rule changed in the school that I went to where the girls didn't have to wear dresses anymore.
Oh, wow. So she was, in a way, a female's advocate.
She was. And, you know, I really think she's probably one of the first feminists I really knew. She would not call herself that. But those small things, the way she challenged the order of things or the way she challenged the power structure, she did it in ways that She was able to make change without being particularly loud about it.
When I say the word feminism, for you now, what words come to you, come to your mind?
What comes to mind are people who are committed to justice and equality on a daily basis for all people, not just women. And that's who I think feminists are. I'm absolutely a feminist, and I think that there are many people in the world that are, that I would deem as feminist, but they may not actually use that word. Just for many different reasons. They're not comfortable with it. Like my mother, I think now even she wouldn't say I'm a feminist. I'm in an institution of learning. So I have students that are, you know, I get older every year and they sort of remain a very similar age as they move through the university with me. And so I see changes in how students respond to the word feminism, which is very interesting. And there was a while there that young girls who were absolutely making artwork that was feminist and about women, but they were not comfortable with that word. And I think they have some sort of idea about feminism where they thought that all feminists were lesbians or something. And I'm certainly not helping that cause because I'm an out lesbian teacher. So, you know, they'd be like, yeah, well, look, you're a lesbian. So, but now I think there's a whole wave of students who are saying, yes, I am. I'm a feminist because Beyonce says she's a feminist. So there's a whole other strange conversation around feminism.
Why do you think feminism is such a taboo word?
Clearly it comes from popular culture for many people. You know, how is feminism, or how are women being defined in popular culture? And I think a lot of youth are looking at that, sadly. So it cuts out a lot of subtlety and focus on how they embody who they are in the world.
And because you said you were so openly lesbian, how was that perceived in your family, and how did that shape who you are today?
I did not have a traumatic coming out story. I came out to my family. They've been very supportive. You know, I came out to them, maybe this is too personal, I'm not sure, I'll have to think about it. But I came out as bisexual, and then, of course, some people in the family are like, well, you haven't been with enough women to actually be bisexual. There's not a balance there. So there was a sort of judgment between, like, how many men I've been with versus women. And I guess, you know, when you come out as bisexual, there's this hope. People, I think, in your family have a hope that, like, you'll sway the way that they would be most comfortable with. Yeah, it was an okay experience, I guess. I think I'd been in a very queer community, even living in Utah. High school, I had a lot of queer friends. And, you know, we didn't call it that. We didn't even really acknowledge that one friend of mine was with another guy, two boys were together. We didn't even like talk about it. We didn't talk about that being gay. It just was. This is very interesting when I think about it. I should get together with those people and discuss what that, you know, it was just accepted that one of my guy friends was with another guy friend. And, you know, and I don't think they were really out in a larger public way, which maybe would have shifted things. It actually relates to who I am in the world. I'm a queer woman. I'm married to a woman. And so that sort of non-heteronormative history of my ancestors also runs parallel to my queerness now. So it was a way for me to sort of join hands with a history that I ran far away from, and to kind of look back again and see how it in some ways was a little bit similar to my non-heteronormative relationship. I probably don't read as, I read as probably queer. I probably don't read as immediately as like, oh, she's a lesbian.
Okay.
I do when I'm with my partner, Tanya. just because I guess she's more butch. I guess maybe I'm more femme. But even those definitions, I like blurring and making them sort of fuzzier so we can get to the in-between.
So, we're now going to take a little break. In the meantime, we'll leave you with Angela's life partner Tanya's power song, Say Yes, by Elliot Smith.
I'm in love with the world through the eyes of a girl who's still around the morning after. We broke up a month ago and I grew up, I didn't know I'd be around the morning after. Been wait and see a happy day, and then you pay and feel like shit the morning after. But now I feel changed around, and instead of falling down, I'm standing up the morning after. Situations get fucked up. Turned around sooner or later. I could be another fool or an exception to the rule. You tell me the morning after. Cricket spin can't come to rest. I'm damaged bad at best. She'll decide what she wants. I'll probably be the last to know. No one says until it shows. See how it is. They want you.
And we're back. You're listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. So, now we're going to start with the Womanity questionnaire per se. Angela, can you tell us what gender you identify with?
Ooh, you know, well, I guess cis, female, queer, there you go.
Okay. Oh, sure, that's great. And what are the attributes you give to female queer?
Oh, you know, these are really hard questions for me because I tend to move away from binaries and definitions because mm-hmm. I'm an interdisciplinary artist, so I'm always sort of defying definitions. I'm not even sure I know how to answer that. The attributes, you know, if there is a definition, I would question it always. So I'm not even going to answer it. How's that?
I think that's great because it's exactly like what we're trying to discuss. Either a fluid or a very strict definition of genders, or can you just be a human being with your uniqueness, you know? Was there a day like where you were really, really grateful to be a female queer?
Well, definitely there's a moment when I was in my 20s and I was part of it was called the Women's Action Coalition. And it was an all women group of activists who were also artists. And we would meet at the Drawing Center, a gallery in New York City every week mm-hmm. on Mondays when the gallery was closed. And we basically talked about inequality and injustices that we could tackle as a group. And it really was a group of women who were politically minded, politically active, but their artwork wasn't necessarily the place that they would do it. However, so that's how this group formed. And this was a, no men were allowed to come to the meetings. And that was a big discussion. You know, what does it mean that we're not allowing men to come to these meetings? But this group grew and grew. The great thing was that even though there were certain, perhaps, let's say, painters that were doing landscape painting, that they were very politically involved. This is a way for them to be engaged. And it meant that our protests and our actions were very creative. It grew quite quickly, and within a year, there were probably 300 women. We had to change the space that we met. And there was this one meeting that I went to where there were 300 women all in a room, all with a similar, I mean, being artists and also being politically minded. That was an incredible experience. I don't think I've ever had that before.
How did that make you feel?
I felt powerful. I felt like a combination of, real strength from all these women. And also, you know, there was a titillating aspect too. I was sort of like, whoa, all these women. It was a physical experience for sure. And intellectual. So that was amazing, that moment.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And at the opposite, were there a moment when you were not grateful to be a female queer? Or when I say not grateful, did you feel limited or did you feel stopped, you know, by any sense, like in your life?
Yes. It would be a place. I learned that on a rock near my house, there was a creek behind our house, and on one of the big rocks, someone had spray painted, "I want to fuck Angela."
Oh.
And I did not see it. Someone found it. So someone came to me and told me, "Oh my gosh, you know what's on this rock?" And it was it was just right. It was not far. It was near my house, very, very close. And I said no, and they wouldn't tell me, they wouldn't say the word to me, so I had to go and look for myself. And I think I was alone even, and I went and I looked, and I felt just sick and powerless. It was awful. And I didn't know who had said it. Obviously there was no one there, but even just the word, and that it was about me and my body, felt
awful. It was like
I felt very vulnerable. Well, and I hadn't even had sex. Like, I was really young. So, I mean, maybe junior high or something. I mean, I was quite young. So, I mean, that sort of sexually charged statement was, incredibly offensive and hit pretty deep.
Yeah, I hear you. So is there anything that you think should change regarding how gender is treated in our society? And what would that be?
Well, I've thought about that question before. And what I've done to take action on it is at the beginning of every semester when I teach, I, you know, obviously read the roster and I read the students' names out to see who's there and who's not. And I tell them that I want them to correct me if I don't say their name properly. And or if they go by another name that's on the list, and to also everyone in the classroom has to say what gender they'd like to be referred to as, or what pronoun like all of us in the class to use. And that feels really important. And I didn't know how important it was until, you know, I've been doing it for probably three or four years now. And I, you know, more and more I'm having students say, you know, thank you for that. It's great because then it empowers the whole class to practice a particular pronoun that someone wants to be referred to as.
Totally agree.
We all kind of help each other out, yeah. I mean, I'm so excited about these topics.
Me too.
Yeah, it also encourages all of us to... It's not a policing thing, but it's a, you know, if I use, you know, if I slip up and don't use a correct pronoun, you know, my student then corrects me, and we're all in the same position. And it's really important that everyone feels like they're visible in my class.
No, I hear that. And as well, like to know the unknown, because sometimes I'm the first one to say, and that the purpose of my show as well is to play the dumb, because I do think that most of the time it's because people don't even know the reality of it, or to know that there is a person behind a pronoun or a name or a definition. And is there a woman you would like to thank?
That would be my mom. That would be my mom, Sandra Snow Ellsworth.
And can you tell me why?
Yeah, she was really, to see how she functioned in incredibly creative ways within a very controlled society and position that she was in, I think has a lot to do with the way I see the world and the way I push up, even though it might be subtle, but the way I sort of push up against structures and challenge systems and examine things all the way around. So that is why.
Thank you.
And all my ancestors, all the female ancestors who walked and walked and walked and walked in long skirts, and, you know, they were tough.
And determined.
Yeah.
Right. And who is the next person you'd like to nominate for this interview?
Nicole Hebron.
Can you tell us about Nicole and why you nominate her?
I nominate Nicole Hebron because she's an incredible artist, and she has been for a number of years working on the Gallery Tally project. And she's bringing attention to the imbalance, starting with the imbalance in the art world in terms of representation of galleries and museums, the balance of men to women. And it's a collective project. She's collaborating with many other people across the globe. And in this one art action, she has created change, and it's quite powerful.
You've been listening to the Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. And so we really, really want to thank you, Angela, for participating and for your vulnerability, honesty, creativity. You can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page, radiofreebrooklyn.com/thewomanityproject. And you can listen to all our episodes on audioboom.com/womanityproject. And for instance, you can listen to the podcast with Tanya. She was, I think, episode 3 and 4. So again, special thanks to Angela. Special thanks to Tanya Catan, to Lizzie Axtet, our music designer, and of course to Radio Free Brooklyn. Tune in next week, The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
And dear listeners, we are now airing one of your power song. This one has been submitted by my own brother, Vincent Fournier, to whom I wish joy and love for 2017. His power song is Journey, Don't Stop Believing by Midnight Train. Au revoir tout le monde. À la semaine prochaine. Thank you.
a singer in a smoky room, a smell of wine and cheap perfume, for a smile they can share.